Welcome to another scintillating episode of the podcast that just doesn't know when it's supposed to drop, Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Every week I take a stroll down the dark alleys around the Court of Nerds and dig up news nobody wants, reviews nobody asks for, and talk about topics nobody cares about. I'm 90% sure I got a handle on things this week, thanks to our new sponsor, Levi's 501 Jeans.
Got me a hard to please woman, so I got me some 501 blues.
I do not know what you mean.
Got me a hard to please woman, so I got me some Levi's 501 blues.
I don't think you know what hard to please means.
You know they're so much more than just butterfly jeans. They shrink to fit me so personally.
Because everybody loves having their scrotum glued to their thigh.
And now my hard to please woman's having a hard time pleasing me. Yeah.
No, you're just having a hard time having a hard time.
Well, she used to make me holler. You know she used to make me scream. That's right. Now all I gotta do is walk in wearing my Levi's 501 jeans.
That's because you went from a baritone to a soprano.
And then my woman says, baby, have mercy on me. In your butterfly shrink a bit. 501 jeans, yeah, my hard to please woman's having a hard time.
Because it's not about reciprocation.
Thanks to my Levi's 501 jeans.
That's Levi's 501 jeans, shrink wrapping your package since 1981. And now the news. Man, am I getting tired of this news. Guess who has another retro console coming out? Atari! Or at least the company that bought the name Atari. The history of Atari is actually really interesting, but that's not why we're here right now. The Atari box. Huh, catchy. No? The new Atari box is clearly inspired by the classic wood found in the Atari 2600. And the new console features ribbed lines, a raised back, and a front panel that can be either glass or wood. Indicator lights glow through these materials, and Atari is including SD card support, an HDMI port, and four USB ports on the Atari box. Two versions of the Atari box will be released, one in wood and one in black slash red. Well, what does this mean? First and foremost, this actually sounds a lot like an Android emulator, much like Ouya. Remember that? That home console that played Android games? No? Well, it launched in 2013 and lasted two whole years. And yes, you could get a bunch of classic Atari games on it. Still don't remember? That's because the people that bought them realized they paid $100 so that they could play mobile games on their TV at twice the cost. So this is a home console like that, with an Atari skin. Atari isn't providing any more information on pricing, release dates, game content, or even full specs right now. Quote, "We know you are hungry for more details on specs, games, pricing, timing," end quote, reads an Atari statement. Quote, "We are not teasing you intentionally." Oh, yes, you are. "We want to get this right, so we've opted to share things step by step as we bring this to life, and listen closely to the Atari community feedback as we do so," end quote. Here's the thing, oh company calling themselves Atari, consumers are fickle beasts. They will tell you that they want things they don't really want. The input from the loudest and most excited among them will drive development to more niche markets. Which is fine as long as it's sustainable, or you can at least make a profit. Which Alibaba-backed Ouya could not. And Alibaba has more money than most nation states with a market cap of 360 billion US. So, good luck with your faux wood hunk of entertainment plastic that you will maybe play twice a month.
Solar Plexus! Look at all of these space files! I've got to find the plans for the inhibitor cannon so I can stop the Brazilian from destroying New Earth's cloud supply. But where on... There they are. The plans.
The only plans you need are for your funeral, Tech Jansen.
Well, if it isn't Abraxia, my most sensual nemesis.
Well, if it isn't Tech Jansen, you should have stayed at the Academy.
You blew up the Academy.
Exactly! And now I'll blow up you!
And get ready to be creeped out by random people again. Google Glass, the smart heads-up display and camera that was supposed to become everyone's next portable computer, isn't dead. It's gotten a job. Multiple jobs, in fact. The second iteration of Google Glass has been tested and deployed across many factories in the United States by companies such as Boeing, GE, and DHL. Dubbed Google Glass Enterprise Edition, this is the same headset that we first saw in the FCC filing in 2015, and glimpsed again last summer, being offered up on eBay. Not a joke. The major upgrades between the original Glass and the Enterprise version are better camera, with a resolution upgraded from 5 megapixels to 8, extended battery life, faster Wi-Fi and processor, and a new red light that turns on when recording video, which might be distracting to the user, but will let people around the user know that he is surreptitiously recording them. Or he's a Borg. Either way, the electronics of the Glass have also been made modular, in the shape of the so-called Glass Pod, which can be detached and reattached to any frame, including safety goggles and prescription glasses. The scale of the Glass EE rollout is still small, indicating sales have been in the hundreds, not really the thousands, and most of the biggest customers have taken on Glass only on a trial basis. However, Google's parent company, Alphabet's product manager, sound bullish about the prospects of Glass in the workplace. Project lead Jay Kothari is quoted in saying, quote, "This isn't an experiment. It was an experiment 3 years ago. Now we are full on production with our customers and with our partners," end quote. Indeed, according to the latest reports, the feedback from the workers in the companies have been overwhelmingly positive, with Glass providing assistance and information on the work on the floor and improving productivity. But the approach and direction with this version of Google Glass are much more circumspect. As Astro Teller, the chief of Alphabet's experimental X division, notes, quote, "We are not going to prejudge exactly the path that is. We'll focus on the places that are actually getting value out of and go through the journey with them, being open-minded about where we are going to go," end quote. Which really means, we made a thing, and now we don't know what to do with the thing.
Soon, all of New Earth's clouds will be mine!
Laugh all you want, Brazilian, but the punchline is jail!
Tech Jensen!
And Kevin and Jenny.
You're under alpha arrest.
All right, I will come quietly. Let me just say goodbye to my weapon.
Of course.
Goodbye, deadly ray gun.
Tech, look out! Kevin, are you all right?
And you've had to have seen this coming, news. Nintendo of Japan announced that it will cease production of the Nintendo 3DS portable consoles for their home market. This makes sense because Nintendo's newest home console is also a portable console. So why devote time and money manufacturing a system that is even less up-to-date than their newest one? Now, before you start buying up limited edition consoles and used hardware section of GameStops, you should know that they will still be manufacturing them for Europe and North America, giving grandparents the Christmas gift option to buy the love of their grandkids with the sounds of Mario jumping into the pipes from the backseat of their children's car. But the greater question is, why? Is there still a market? Why, yes, there is, as it turns out. The 3DS sold 400,000 units last year and 700,000 2DS units in the US alone. That's kinda nuts, but not unexpected. Put a plump plumber on a decade-old technology and people will still go crazy for it. The lesson in all of this? I don't know, maybe buy some more Nintendo stock?
Our modestly scaled weaponry can't stop them. Looks like I'll have to surrender.
Not so fast, Admiral. I'll go. Give me an Armo helmet and I'll fight them mano a warship.
But Tech...
There's no other way.
Admiral? We could fire the big gun.
The what? Oh, yeah! Fire the big gun! Tech
That was my suggestion.
I have a special thank you present.
Admiral, may I?
Of course.
Pa-rum-pum.
In I swear it used to be Namco Bandai and not Bandai Namco reviews, Tekken 7 came out last month and I was too busy playing Injustice 2 to give it any notice. Then Prime Day happened and I got it for $20 with the reasoning, if I get 10 hours of fun out of it, then I'll come out ahead. Now I wasn't the biggest of Tekken fans, I preferred Namco's other 3D fighter Soul Calibur to Tekken, and even Tecmo's Dead or Alive, and Sega's Virtua Fighter to Tekken even more. But I have a weird nostalgia for playing Tekken 2 in my dorm with my friends, using a bear to beat up an android ninja. So why not try the new one? I haven't played a Tekken game since 4, and I figured I'd check in on it. Truth be told, not much has changed. It's a Japanese arcade port, plain and simple. Yes, it does have a long and contrived story mode full of art and cinematics that makes the mistake that anyone playing these games do so for the deep storytelling elements. The story is shite, and has always been shite, and will continue to be a bunch of convoluted shite. We play Tekken so we can pretend to be Bruce Lee punching a panda bear. Now, Tekken 7 is a rather decent button masher. There are combos, juggles, counters, and unblockable rage moves. But it's rare that you ever get a chance to pull them off with an experienced opponent, unless you are both under some kind of agreement to kill each other in the most stylish ways possible. But even then, Tekken 7 isn't even that stylish. Sure, it's fun beating the snot out of a person sitting next to you, and there's a rather large roster, and you can have a good amount of customization, but everything seems to be at least 5 years behind other fighters. For instance, there's only one specific line your character will say at the start of every fight and at the end of every fight. You can't upgrade your abilities, the environments aren't really interactive, they just change from round to round. Even the graphics look rather dull, with molded hair that doesn't really flow, with muscles that seem like they glisten and not really sweat. It's just so 2012. So I can't really recommend this game if you're paying $60. Honestly, $20 seems to be about the limit I will pay for this experience. Just so I can see the look on my wife's face when she KOs me by detaching the head off of her android and beating me with it.
Tech Jansen!
You're all right, kids. I was sent back from the future to protect you. Now let's go... Don't worry, kids. I've been sent from further in the future to save you from me. In 5 minutes, I would have eaten these berserker berries, gone insane, and attacked you. Although these berries do look delicious and ripe.
Huh?
It's okay, kids. Schlorb here told me what happened.
When did he do that?
I don't remember.
Tech, I've come from the future to send you to the past. Schlorb has an important message for you. Everything should be all right now, kids. This one was an accident.
Mm. Pa-rum-pum.
Oh, Tex, together you've obviously had thousands of girlfriends.
Hey, who are you guys? That shirt had too much starch. Did the slime monster get me yet?
Yes.
Damn it! Schlorb, I'm pretty sure I need to bring you to the past. Stay out of caves! Come on, I know a cave where we can camp out for the night. When you see me in a minute, give me this egg beater.
This is f***ed up.
I wonder what topic I'll get this week. Wheel of Insanity, turn, turn, turn. Tell me the lesson, which I shall burn. It reads, what makes a good tabletop or RPG gaming experience? Damn, that's a pretty loaded question. The answer will obviously differ from one gamer to the other, so I guess I have to answer the question with another question. Why do we game? It seems like a simple enough answer, right? To have fun! But different people have different meanings of the word fun. To some, fun simply means winning. If you are one of those people, I don't usually want to play with you unless it's to put you in your place. To others, fun means relaxing, throwing dice, and getting a laugh or two while hanging out with friends. If you are one of those people, I'd like to invite you over to a gaming session. To a smaller group of others, fun means immersing yourself into a fantasy world and devoting yourself and the group to a shared imaginary world. If you're this kind of person, you can come over, but please bathe before you do. I know you're just trying to be authentic to your character, but please think about those that share the table with you. But along with the character people you have huddled around the table, there's an overarching mindset that goes into these sessions. Whether you are a strict adherer to the rules and mechanics of a particular gaming system, or you open to rules modification in favor of fluff or storytelling. The people who like to win tend to be called rule lawyers. Now, I would be the first to point out that without rules, we have anarchy, and anarchy isn't very fun unless you're a sociopath. We need rules. They shape our experience. We should never be fundamental to the fun of the experience. Games succeed because the people want them to succeed. These are supposed to be social endeavors. Almost every rule book from D&D to 40K, from Pathfinder to X-Wing, will let you know that the rules are a framework. Hell, they're there to simply access fun, not to be the end-all and be-all of fun. Rules are the guide, not the guarantee, that Mork the Rogue gets to reroll failed slashing damage. What is important is to establish everyone's expectations. Usually the DM or GM is responsible for this, but the group has to buy into their vision as well, or the whole endeavor falls apart. How strict are we going to be with these rules? How much do you want to delve into roleplay? How strict do we adhere to the lore? Do we go off script? Has Sledge had too much to drink? Has he had too little? These are important questions to ask in your gaming session. When you have all of the answers of those questions in place, the gaming system matters very little.
Launch this ship! We can't. The pilot's aorta just detached.
Please, Tech Jansen, save my husband.
Lay the pilot on the dashboard. I'll need sterile gauze, a Babcock clamp, and 6 kilopints of blood.
Oh, my water just broke.
And hot water and towels.
There he is.
To the ship. Now I just need something to cut with.
Breathe! Ow!
There's that aorta. Keep breathing. Sutures, massage the heart. I can see the head. Fire aft torpedoes. Freeze, damn it, breathe. Live, damn it, live. And push. Your heart is fixed, and you have a beautiful baby boy.
Thank you, Tech Jansen.
Tech, I'd like to show you my gratitude. So would I.
But your baby.
Tech, it's not his.
But how? We never...
I'm from 9 months in the future.
Harum pum.
Thanks for listening this week to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. If you like the show, or hate it, let me know at thecourtofnerds.com or like our Facebook page and leave me a message. October is coming up quick, so you can get your tickets to Grand Rapids Comic Con and tell me in person. I'm Kevin from The Court of Nerds saying, if you tug on anything at all, you find it connected to the rest of the universe. Bye.